Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton. I am Jerry, joined today on the show by, I've got Terry and Max here. All right, we're forming a trio to talk a lot of Everton-based things. Gentlemen, it's good to talk to you again. Max, it's been a little while. How's life?
Yes, sir. It has been a while. Life is life, Jerry. I literally feel like I'm just, you know, it's all just passed me by very quickly. I'm just always on the move, always got things to do. It's just like flying past me, to be honest. I'm like jumping from meeting to meeting, from part-time job to part-time job, and it's like, whew, like sometimes it's, you know, you need to just sit down and be able to chill out for a little bit, which I've just got one of those minds where it's very hard to do so. Like I'm just one of them that I've always got like 100 tabs open in my head, if that makes sense. So literally when I'm
that's not, where I'm at right now too. I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm currently working on an assignment which is dealing with contemporary issues in the current sports media climate. I've chosen to do racism. I've focused on Ali during the 60s and his stance on Vietnam, and Colin Kaepernick and what's going on with him since 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've quite enjoyed that assignment, to be honest with you.
That's great. Yeah. That's what a great topic. Holy crap. Yeah, there's so many different ways to go with it, especially like in like contemporary like football across the world and in certain countries. The way certain countries their view of racism is just different in certain places. I mean, immediately you jump to Italy. The way, you know, certain supporters are just like, hey, it's not a big deal, and you're like, huh?
Yeah, I feel you know,
it's some people, it's like a culture thing, but you're dealing with some stuff that's even bigger than that. It's like, you know, systemic, like you're talking about with the Kaepernick stuff and the kneeling that has been a huge issue with American football between many different sects. It's you're going to have a juicy paper, my friend.
Thank you, sir. I've got about 400 words left to play with, so I'm just winding it up now, finishing it off, and then on to finishing me 10,000 words.
All right. Well, if you need the point of view of a long-haired, gray-haired, you know, white guy from North Carolina, you know, I know a few. All right? Just saying. Terry, how's things with you, man? You doing all right?
Yeah, not as exciting as Max's paper. I'm really interested in that. I'd be interested in seeing that when it's done. But with the word count, if you start struggling towards the end, you can just put screw Flanders till you make it. But that's not a more recent Simpsons episode, but it wasn't one of the classics, which is what we always mention. So I was a bit worried that you might not have seen that. But yeah, Homer's food. He runs out of anything to say, so he just puts screw Flanders over and over again. to answer your question, Jerry, I'm good. I can't really add anything to the flow of conversation because I've seen a couple of films recently and you guys haven't seen them, so we can't even discuss them.
But, what have you seen besides Parasite?
Well, a bit of a departure from Parasite, but I saw Birds of Prey. The Harley Quinn.
Really?
Yeah, that wasn't that good. It was not unwatchable bad, but it wasn't that good. And now I'm looking through some decent like sort of films that I've missed. And I don't mean like highbrow, oh, these are great films. I mean like things I want to see that I didn't get round to seeing. So The Disaster Artist is one I want to see next.
Where oh, not yes! Seeing,
yeah, the Franco brothers do a film about the making of The Room. And I'm going to watch that soon because I just need to see it. It's meant to be amazing. Nothing will ever beat The Room itself, but apparently it's really good.
Okay, yeah, we definitely need to. Yeah. So Disaster Artist is cool. And for those of you who don't know a whole lot about that, we have a tendency to talk about one of the best bad movies ever, The Room. And so, yeah, we talk about that every once in a while here, and The Disaster Artist is basically narrative depiction of the making of that film. And James Franco plays Tommy Wiseau, the director, writer, producer, and lead star of The Room. And it is a fascinating story. That's what Terry's alluding to there. Good stuff. Very good stuff, guys. So definitely differing subjects, but I'm actually down to talk about those with you guys anytime. Those are both totally separate spectrums, but also all engaging. So guys, we should get started. Otherwise, we're going to end up talking about your separate talking points all day. Yeah. So really quick for the pod listeners out there, here's the way the show's going to work. We're going to be talking about the United match. It's the United Extra Time segment. So we have opinions, as I'm sure all of you people out there have as well. We'll be starting out with that. Then we're going to talk about Leighton Baines. Played pretty well this weekend. So the question is going to be Leighton Baines' new contract? Question mark. All right. And then we'll have a starting 11 quiz. All right. A match from the past. These gents, head to head. They're used to it.
Can I just interrupt this break for a broadcast with some breaking news?
Breaking news.
Mason Holgate signed the contract till 2025.
Nice.
Up the top.
Yes.
Mason Holgate. Holgate please, for England.
Please leave that in the pod. That's brilliant.
Yes. We've got to keep that in because it's just beautiful news. Yeah. Hell yeah. Now the day might not be shit. all right. So anyway, let's continue with the United Extra Time segment. For those of you who have been asleep all weekend long, game ended 1-1. So didn't have to, but it did. So really quick, there's a really big defining moment that happened at the end. We're going to save that for the end of this particular segment. We're going to save it for the end. Let's get all that in. Let's talk about the actual football match first, and then we'll get to the nonsense. All right. So basically, we had a 16-14 advantage in shots. I think both teams had a similar shot total when it came to being on target. We had 44% possession, 13-8 advantage in corners. We played a lot. We played a pretty strong second half, frankly. And honestly, if you were watching that second half, you would say, "Yeah, they had a goal coming." I think if you're watching that, you watch the momentum. Yeah, it was all right, guys. So Max, let's let you kind of get things rolling. If you want to talk about who you feel like played a solid match, and we'll kind of gradually get toward any kind of other folks that may have disappointed. We'll get there later, but let's talk about some positives first.
Positives being that the starting 11 surprised me with the performance. I don't know if you saw my tweet that I put out there before the game. Obviously, when I've seen the starting 11, I thought, a little bit suspect. I would have much preferred to see Mason Holgate partner Andre Gomez in central midfield and have Yerry Mina in there with Michael Keane at the back. Not exactly against Tom Davies. The lad's living me dream, a blonde lad that wears his socks low running around Goodison Park is literally what I wanted to be when I was younger. So, not against the lad, I do love him. But given just how well Mason Holgate played in central midfield at Old Trafford, obviously being a central defender by trade, he would have provided that defensive cover to Andre Gomez, who was making his first start following that horrific leg break. And it's just absolutely incredible the fact that he's back after 3 months. So again, Jerry, if you're going to look for like a positive from an individual perspective, Andre Gomez all day long. It didn't look out of shape, didn't look scared, just back to absolutely dominating in the middle of the park. Funnily enough, on the way to the game, I was a little bit late getting picked up, so I literally had to sprint from County Road to my seat, managed to get in there just in time for the goal. So absolutely bizarre from Calvert-Lewin. And I think now you can safely say 15 goals this season, be probably the Lukaku replacement. You know, numbers don't lie. For him to be hitting 15 goals, I think it is exceptional, and just goes to show what a change in system can do for individual confidence. I do think, however, it would have been a completely different story if he'd have gone on and scored that one-on-one just a few moments later after his first goal. And I think it's just quite typical of a player in form like himself. He can grab a goal like that first one where he's just running and willingly closing down. But the 1v1, which you should expect to be his bread and butter. Obviously, a good save from De Gea, but you know, you'd like to see your centre forward putting them away. Yeah, we didn't play too badly. I think, obviously, because we spent that chance. Man United had then applied the pressure. Matic hit the crossbar, which, you know, fantastic game of football. And again, I think where my concern comes in at the fact that Mason Holgate wasn't in the midfield. Bruno Fernandes, the game that me and Tom were ranting and raving about in the preview for the game, like, you can't allow someone of that quality so much time and so much space. Can't stand,
I got the same thing written down, man.
Yeah, so and Gomez and Davies didn't quite have ground on him, and so that, I think that's where my point stems from. I would have much preferred Holgate, maybe even Delph in there to sort of do the defensive work. But yeah, as you say, it was a good game from both sides of accounts, really. Criticism of Pickford again, I do think it's harsh. That double save he made in the second half is one of the best things I think I've ever seen from a goalkeeper, period. Like, it was just absolutely sensational.
Yeah.
Absolutely gutted about what happened at the end, but we'll get on to that.
Yeah, when I mentioned players who were struggling, I started writing some down. And then as I kept writing down, I was thinking, okay, well, this player did, I can think of individual moments where they struggled. And then I can think of other moments where they actually did okay. I didn't see where any particular player where you're like, them, they were the bad one today. You know what I mean? I felt like it was more of a gray area for a lot of players where there were moments of brilliance and some, you know, mediocrity. It was there.
Yeah.
You know? So Terry, let's go to you before I mention some other stuff. Anybody in particular, you know, surprise you in a way where you're like, yeah, that was awesome, or anything, or anyone where you're thinking, well, I didn't really like the fact that person started, or anything like that. Anything about that before we kind of get a little bit more specific?
Not so much surprises. I mean, the lineup was a big change, but I'm not surprised at this point. Like, I've just come to accept this is what Carlo seems to be doing. Whether he's doing it for now, for the summer, or whether he's just going to do it full time, he changes the squad a lot, and he picks lineups that you wouldn't expect, and you certainly wouldn't pick yourself. But there's a reason behind all of it. You can see why Sidibe and Mina were dropped after last week. They made mistakes. I think if we had a stronger squad with that supported a lot more confidence in, we'd be a lot more on board with it. But because people have, you know, seen every player have, you know, bad games this season, it's harder to get your head around. The two forwards again, they're just the boys, aren't they? Like, you know, Max said there that the replacement for Lukaku seems to be Calvert-Lewin, but the two of them together, that Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin are the goals that Lukaku used to score, and we've now got the same thing. Which obviously we need to address going forward, but we used to have one player who scored all our goals, and now we've got two players who score all our goals. So if you could spread that out even more, that's even better. But we used to play with one up front with Lukaku, now we're playing with two. So we just sort of, they are the replacements, and they're both in, you know, white hot form at the minute. Like Calvert-Lewin, he knew nothing about his goal, but De Gea's caught napping on him, and he Solskjaer alluded to it. Like, Calvert-Lewin chases everything. I think he said he chases paper on a windy day. It's like, you can't be that lax when you've got, you know, players, you know, that energetic, you know, snapping at you, and he's paid the price. After we scored that goal, United did get a good grip of the game. They didn't, you know, like, we obviously, the follow-up chance for Calvert-Lewin, I feel quite sorry for him, because That is a top class save from De Gea. Could make it 2-0 in. It's mad that he doesn't score from that, but scores from the first one. But yeah, basically United got into the game then, and we just didn't live with Bruno Fernandes. They had obviously, I think it was 4 central midfielders on the pitch. So what they surrendered out wide, which nullified their strikers because they were pulling wide, so, you know, to assist. They had all the advantage in central midfield because Gomez and Davies were just overloaded completely, and Fernandes always found himself as that free man. And we did pay for it with the goal. Now, Pickford can do a lot better. I'm reaching the end of my rope with Pickford. I mean, he's... De Gea is... and Pickford, like, mirror images of each other at the minute. They are always liable to put a, you know, drop a clanger or, like, you know, put one in their own net, but then they'll come out with an absolutely unbelievable reflex save, which people, you know, for some people that redeems them in the match. For me, it's like, no, I don't want a keeper like that. Like, I'd prefer the keeper to do what he's capable of and just do the great saves and not, you know, jump over the shots like he's done in the past two games, the past two home matches. So we get in a half-time. Half-time was a bit of a blessing. I thought we were lucky to get in level. Man United weren't making chance after chance, but they were having a much better go of it possession-wise. Come out after half-time, whatever Ancelotti had done at half-time did the trick. We were far more in control of the game. We had far better chances from that point on. I mean, Max said before that living the dream, Tom Davies, little, you know, blonde lad with his socks pulled down, running around Goodison. Well, you know, Luke Shaw's, you know, living my dream of a big fat fuck playing as a Premier League player. His tits in the wind. That shows there's hope for even me yet. Because their fullbacks couldn't live with our way.
Can you warn me when you're going to do that? Oh my gosh, sorry. I just...
Yeah, so we had better of it in the second half.
That's because... premium content. You're missing out. You don't listen to this show.
Yeah, he's a hero to us all, Luke Shaw. Anyway, so we had better, much better of it in the second half, and then obviously towards the end happens, you know, the training cone hit the post, I've got to say as well. You know, you criticise him when he doesn't do stuff, but you've got to get it when he does. Yeah, but you tell you what, Man United should sign Sigurdsson because he found Harry Maguire's head on every corner. So they should buy him because that would be a brilliant tactic for them to have. But, you know, he hit the post and was... Well, the reason we got the free kick, I think it was that one we'll go into as we get to the last bit of the game. But, yeah, could have had 3 points. We didn't. Shall we talk about why?
Before we do, I want to give credit to Michael Keane. He's often thrown under the bus, but I thought he did play exceptionally well, especially considering we were opting to play out for in the back. You know, receiving centre half, receiving the ball in the keeper's area, and I thought he did exceptionally well. I do, however, think that we missed the trick not playing Bernard for me off, and we could have possibly brought Moyes Keane on a little bit earlier to allow him to impact the game a bit more.
Yeah, I was worried about Keane in this one, but the match kind of played out, or as in Michael Keane. The match kind of played out in a way where it kind of benefited who he is and how he plays. It just it worked out well for him, which was awesome. I thought their goal was a joint effort from several parties. It wasn't just Pickford, you know, not making that save, but additionally, Sidibe's pass was not on target. Walcott maybe could have wrangled that in a little bit better, and we didn't pressure the shooter. I mean, that's not just one mistake. That's several mistakes. It takes a village. That was frustrating when I watched that back. I was just, you know, when I saw so many different spots, it's not one of those where you're like, oh, he loses his man and the guy scores. That's easy. No, this is several. And I think you can fault all of them, but then we're talking about a lot of other players who actually had other moments where they shone within the match. You know, immediately I jumped to Pickford, like you mentioned earlier. Just, that was really disappointing. Yeah, there was some wicked movement on that ball, but you still think he should have been able to bring that in. But then what does Pickford do later? He friggin' looks like a Spider-Man making those. It was ridiculous, those saves. I was loud watching that one. So let's dunk our toes, just barely, just dip our toes into the VAR ocean. And again, for those of you who didn't watch this one, you missed quite an ending with Everton scoring a match-winning goal in added time, and then it being disallowed by VAR for offsides because Sigurdsson supposedly was impacting the line of sight of De Gea. So, just to kind of go through the moment, Sigurdsson actually goes in for quite a shot, pretty close range, and just gets decked as he's shooting it by Wan-Bissaka. So, that's probably a foul. the ball ends up popping back out to Calvert-Lewin, who plays it. Was that ball on target? Was it going at the goal, guys? Do we know?
Yeah, it was on target.
Because I've heard some people say that it was not on target.
No, I think it was on target. I think the Maguire deflection changed the path of the ball, which has ultimately deceived De Gea. But he could still see the ball.
He had his eyes on the ball the entire time. Watch the man's head. He watches the ball the entire time. Okay.
The official view will be that it was on target, where it's quite hard to tell considering how far it travels for it deflects, but because it's on target, so they don't, you know, like they've ruled it out. If it's off target, I think they count it. So they obviously think it was on target.
Yeah, so then there's the whole, some people are saying it's the fact that Sigurdsson moved his legs to let the ball in, and that distracted De Gea, made him look at Sigurdsson, which is not true. He's literally watching the ball the entire time, doesn't have a prayer of saving it. He's not going to save it. He sees where the ball is going, but he makes no movement to try to save it. So he knows what's going on the entire time. All right? So I got to be honest, guys. This is one of those where when I hear people trying to give, like, pundits actually trying to take the side where the VAR decision was correct, I really try to be objective to try to take all, and it just sounds stupid when people are explaining it. It's really agitating because it's like they are trying to be contrarian and to be a know-it-all, when in reality, most know-it-alls know very little, all right? You're telling me this particular conversation, which so many people fall on the other end of the conversation, this is a clear and obvious error by the official, by the match official. All right? This is the same problem we've had over and over, guys. It's the implementation of VAR, okay? VAR is a tool, right? It's a tool. You got a knife. A knife can be a very useful tool helping you survive, but also you could stab yourself with it and stab other people in the eyes, all right? So the thing is, this is a tool. It all depends on who's using it. And I got to be honest, right now, like, I don't know. We haven't even talked about the fact that Carlo got red carded at the end by this doofus who told him to disappear. Well,
the thing with the goal is, right, so Sigurdsson gets his chance away. It's saved. And then he's hacked down by Wan-Bissaka a second after. So the ball, you know, so ricochets out off the save. Calvert-Lewin picks it up, shoots, and it goes in the net from Maguire. So the VAR pulls it back and then reviews the offside. But why does it not review the original foul? It's like
the foul. It's what my issue is. Partially, first, I think you should say, like, I do think it's absolutely ridiculous that a fantastic game of football has been completely overwritten by this, you know, VAR controversy. You know, it was a fantastic game of football, both teams hitting the post, and you know, really hotly contested. But just to add to your point, Terry, what frustrates me so much about the VAR call is that the officials have looked at it purely from a Manchester United perspective. They've not factored in the fact that Sigurdsson's been absolutely taken out. I'd hold my hand up and be like, right, okay, he's probably took a hard fall and is a bit winded as to why, you know, he's just sort of like rolled over onto his side. You know, if you're nitpicking, lad, just get off the pitch. Even if you have to roll, just get off the pitch. You know, and again, as you say, Jerry, even if you, at a descriptive level, it's pathetic, isn't it, when you like talking through it? Because at a time in the Premier League, particularly when you're competing for the European places, like 3 points are so valuable at the minute, and we've lost out because the officials, and it makes perfect sense, VAR is a tool that can be used to protect the product.
It could be great. You know, it could be something that's enhancing the game. That's the thing that's driving me just batshit, guys. It's the fact that it could be making things better. It could be improving things. But instead, what they've done is used it for the exact same reason they didn't have it before. Everybody talked about how all the big six don't want VAR, because that would mean all those chances that are favorable are not going to go in their favor anymore. But guess what? The officials are still doing it. And at this point, it's like they're just pissing in our faces.
Yeah, I mean, with that decision, it's like, remember Man City, where there was they were checking for a penalty whilst the player was offside when he was fouled? They were checking for both, weren't they? I can't remember the player, but basically a player went through to the Everton goal and was fouled, but the flag had already gone up. So like the team sort of stopped playing. It's like, why can't they check both? Well, was he offside? Yes, by the letter of the law, he's offside, central to the goal. De Gea can see the ball the whole time. He watches it, goes to the right, then watches it ricochet, then goes to the left but can't get to it. But Sigurdsson still is directly central with the goal in an offside position. Okay, well, that's not advantage then, because we've collected the ball and not had any advantage from it. So you take it back to the initial foul. So we either should get that penalty or get the goal, depending on the referee's or the VAR referee's discretion. It's just completely bonkers that it took them 2 seconds to look that up and go, right, which is the way that is more favourable for Man United, which is basically what they've done. Like Max said there, they looked at it from the Man United point of view, not looked at the whole incident. They just totally ignored, which is what a lot of these pundits that you alluded to, Jerry, are all doing. They're sort of pretending this foul and Sigurdsson didn't happen. And how long did they look at the Dele Alli handball before getting it wrong and not giving it? Yeah. They looked at it for about 3 minutes, 4 minutes, and then still got it wrong. But with this one, yeah, no, that's fine. He's offside. Well, yeah, he is. What about the foul? No. He's offside, guys. He's offside. It's over. And then obviously, as what was it you said before, Max, off camera about the first team of firsts once again?
It was a tweet from Jim Keegan, who I know we've the show previously. He put a tweet out saying the first club to have a player punished retrospectively for diving, which was obviously Omar Nias a couple of years back against Crystal Palace, the first club to have a penalty incorrectly awarded against them by a VAR, which was the Michael Keane incident for Brighton, the first club to have an own goal ruled out for offside by VAR, which is obviously the Maguire own goal, and the first club to have a manager red carded, which I'd like to do some digging into, because I don't know about that one, but I think the point still stands.
There's been plenty of managers have been sent to the stands, but I think with this new, you can book and red card a manager. Like it's the optics of it. I think the way it looks, like he's the first one to get a red card, and the others have been just sent to the stands in the middle of the match.
Sure. Well, oh, to be an Evertonian, who'd do that?
But should we get to the referee after the game?
The magician's apprentice telling Carlo to disappear. You know what I mean? It's just. I mean, here's the thing. I feel like if you want respect, you have to show respect. All right? It would be very simple for him to say, okay, here's what the person in the booth said. Here it is. Okay? He could have said that. But instead, he's sitting there telling him to disappear because he's big-manning him. okay? He's acting like, I'm bigger than you right now. I mean, sorry.
That's Carlo Ancelotti.
Yes, that's what I mean. I'm thinking the same thing.
Chris Cavana, a Manchester-born referee, we need to add, had an appalling performance. He just generally just didn't really have control of the game. There were plenty of calls that were awry, to say the least. Obviously, you know, I think something that Maguire obviously come out with after the game was that, you know, it was important that the officials didn't get caught up in the emotion of the moment with all us going ballistic. I think I flew about five rows forward when that went in. But the referee, like, obviously the goal's been disallowed, full time whistle eventually, and it was just, you know, obviously ringing out in boos. Goodison was a bear pit. I think he just wanted to get off the pitch as quickly as possible. Ancelotti, rightly so, has gone up to him after an explanation, but, you know, he's just not got very good managerial skills to just, as you say, Jerry, his mannerisms, his sort of cockiness. What was that? What was the analogy you used for it, Terry?
It wasn't mine. I nicked it. But basically, he's standing there like you've all met that policeman or that bouncer or that school prefect. That look on his face, like he's got. You can see him on camera going, disappear now. And Carlo's going, no, I won't disappear. I want an explanation. And he goes, that gives that sort of that huff face, and then gives it like, get out me face. Gives him the red card, and he was just embarrassing all game. He books Adibe for coming back on the pitch when he was next to a linesman after he'd been injured. He gave a free kick to us when Fred hit the ball with his knee, saying it was handball, and he was right there looking at it, so he had a good view of it. He was embarrassing all game. I mean, well, it wasn't him who gave the VAR. Like, the VAR, he gave the goal, and the VAR's overruled him. But he sent Carlo Ancelotti off for asking for an explanation, and he's on camera, so there's no like foul language or anything like that. But Fred chest bumped him over that handball, and nothing said. So you can chest bump the referee, you can surround him like the Man United players doing. I'm not 100% sure this was him, but like, so Klopp last season sprints onto the pitch while the game's ongoing. All that's fine, but if you ask a manager, if a manager asks for an explanation on a decision and is upset, you red card them with like a pissy look on your face, as if to say, who does this guy think he is talking to me like that? It's like, oh, I've got a, I hope and I feel that he'll be another Clattenburg now. He won't ref a game at Goodison for a few years just because of the unnecessary aggro it'll cause, because he was absolutely diabolical. He's cost us, him and John Moss in the VAR booth have cost us 2 points there and a good home win against Man United just for being incompetent.
Yeah.
I'm getting fed up of saying it. It's just so regular. It goes back years, but just over the last 2 years, how many times we're on the wrong end of poor refereeing, it's just getting beyond a joke now.
Yeah, I heard someone say Ancelotti was trying to talk to someone in the crowd, but the referee was just in the way.
I saw that.
In his eyeline,
Yeah, my wife actually said she absolutely loved the fact that Carlo had like no reaction to the red card. He just turned and walked off. No like anger, no anything. Just kind of turned around like, and I was like, because he's a badass. You know what I mean? Because he's the real gangster in the situation. All right.
That was the only thing, that the only positive from that whole situation was just more Carlo goodness. Like, I love him. He's been to Bootle Strand today for some reason.
I know. I've seen that.
Yeah,
one of the people.
It's not the best of places. It's a pretty grim shopping centre. there's much nicer places you can go. So, but yeah, I mean, I love Carlo. It's like, this is what we were missing with Marco Silva. Can you imagine Marco Silva? He'd have just ran down the touchline and got the kettle brewing for the referee in his room. He'd have been waiting with a cup of tea for him.
That's what we've been waiting for, is somebody who actually stands up for the club. We want somebody to stand up for us, to basically say, hey, call out the fact that this sucks. All right, call out the fact that this is not just, it's not fair, there's brutal evidence here, and the referees just get to, you know, hang out scot-free. And you know what? The league has come out and said some of the calls against us in the past have been wrong. They said that. But how does that help us now? It doesn't. Because nothing has been changing. It's the same stuff. You know? So I'm letting Carlo keep calling out these simpletons. I'm down with it. All right? So we should move on because this has been a beefy segment. So anyway, that's been our United Extra Time. Yeah, it's the people who have VAR in their clutches that we're struggling with at the moment. Not really the VAR itself. We are here to talk about the ageless wonder that is Leighton Baines. But that is kind of the question here. Is he actually ageless wonder? All right? Because that's what we're here to discuss. He actually put in quite a shift against United on Sunday. Three chances created, just rattling off some stats here really quick. 22 passes completed, 12 crosses, 66 touches, 5 duels won, 2 area duels won, 2 interceptions, and 3 recoveries. Basically, he had a good one. He played well. And that's what we've been getting from him when he's used sparingly. All right? When we get spot starts from Leighton Baines, he looks good. He looks strong. And he looks like he's still got it. He's 35 years old. I just want to put that out there. I'm older than that, so I'm not sitting there like saying, you know, I'm not trying to be ageist or anything, but I'm just saying he'll be 36 in December, okay? So here's the deal. Aging players usually do well in spot duty, but consistency after a while can be an issue. So let's say we give him a new contract, let's say we keep him around a little bit longer, and let's say if Luca Dean is our starter and he's out for a long time for some reason, hope that doesn't happen, but if he's out for a long time, then we're talking about Leighton Baines being our number two for like more than a month. That, I think, is the scenario we have to ask ourselves when we're saying, is this the kind of situation where you want to give him a new contract? You got to think about leadership qualities. You got to think about the fact that he's an amazing player for the club for a long time. So, Terry, I'm going to let you start this one. Do you give Leighton Baines a new contract?
No, but with an asterisk.
Of course. We're all going to be like, yes, with an asterisk. No, with an asterisk. So many asterisks. Go ahead, Terry. Sorry.
I think we will. Because Carlo has name-checked him and Coleman a couple of times since he's been at the club as like important squad members, especially when he first arrived and he hadn't really... It may have just been, these are the players I know play for Everton because they were there a long time ago. But he's name checked them a couple of times. Baines has performed quite well when he's come in for the games that he has done, and I don't mean he's not looked off the pace. I mean, like, he's been one of the better players. He was one of the better players at Arsenal, and he's one of the better players against Man United. So I think we will. I think the other areas of the squad will be more pressing financially. So I think, you know, I personally think we need, you know, 4 players at least to go straight into the first team. Then, you know, centre back, right back, central midfield, and right midfield. So I think that leaves very little sort of scope to bring in a new left back to replace Baines. But in an ideal world, I would like to see Baines go out on a high, you know, with his, you know, still playing at a decent level. You know, we still love him. I don't want to see him stay too long, which I've seen other players do. And there's, you know, it mars their memory a little bit if they don't go out, you know, at a good level. And I'd like to see us bring a young, you know, a very young left back in who can, you know, sort of be groomed and, you know, rotate with Luca Dean throughout the season, especially if we're in Europe where they'll get a lot more games. But that may be, in terms of the reality of the situation, maybe a little bit Football Manager, maybe a little bit FIFA, where, you know, you doesn't work like that. You can't have wholesale changes every single summer to freshen the squad up. So I wouldn't. I'd like to get a young player in and, you know, really go down that route. But I would not be unhappy if the club chose not to, and I don't think they are going to do it. I think they will renew his contract for another year and then address the left back position the summer after, when, you know, fingers crossed, there's not as much surgery needed to other parts of the squad. I think they see that as, you know, fine for now, and we'll get that one next time.
Okay. Max, how are you feeling about it?
Leighton Baines is probably, maybe Wayne Rooney in his prime, but on from that, Leighton Baines got to be up there. I've seen the Premier League are coming out with like these Premier League awards, and I think Leighton Baines would certainly be our nomination. He could have left us a couple of years ago and gone on to be a, you know, a trophy winning caliber left back, but just out of sheer loyalty, and I think, you know, it speaks volumes of the man that he is, that he stayed, which very much looked like till the end of his career. Would I extend his contract? Yes, because of the point Terry raised, that we're obviously the other matters that need to be addressed first. But, and again, this is kind of adding to the point that you mentioned as well, that Everton are traditionally so bad at succession planning. You know, there's so many players that we've played until they're well past the sell-by date and they're burnt out. Tim Howard, Leon Osborne, Tony Hibbert, just, you know, there's a list of players that we just burnt out. I'm cautious that, you know, we've played them against Arsenal, played them against Man United, and I don't think that's how you should use Leighton Baines. Obviously needs must with the injury to Luka Dean, but it doesn't bode quite well. I think, as you said, Jerry, 35 years old with a history of injury problems, and, you know, it only takes one knock or, you know, a certain amount of overtraining for one of those injuries to flare up again. That being said, technically, still, I think, you know, a cut above quite a few in the squad, still got an absolute wonder of a left foot. His delivery is absolutely brilliant. Would have liked to seen him adopt a responsibility at set pieces a bit more. I mean, I know they probably favoured Sigurdsson, given that he could, you know, cut across with his right foot. But as I said, his delivery and ability from set pieces has just never been doubted. Again, just to sort of raise a red flag, I think one major criticism of the under-23s is that, although, yeah, fantastic, we're just coming off the back of winning, you know, a double winning season in Cup and League, but we never seem to have an individual that can step up and be a functioning part of the first team. Matty Foulds, I believe, is currently playing left back for the under-23s, and again, and I've not seen all that much of the under-23s, but again, if one of them was good enough to step in, I think we'd all know. And that doesn't seem to be the case, particularly at left back. I think we can only, you know, touch wood that Luka Dean gets fit and healthy ASAP.
I think there was a time where we felt like we had kind of the heir apparent when we had Anthony Robinson in there. I think the club had some high hopes there, but he was suffering. It felt like, seemed like injury after injury after injury. And I think now, that's when we finally were like, you know what, we're just going to go ahead and sell him to Wigan, which is where he's
I moved to AC Milan.
Yeah.
Very nearly materialized or fell through, which was quite bizarre, which almost kind of made you think, oh, I wish we hadn't let him go, but...
Yeah, it's hard. It's a weird thing. You can't predict that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'd only feel like that if you haven't seen AC Milan recently. Like,
it's no true.
It feels like he's going to a bigger, better, you know, club than he's just left. And, you know, certainly, you know, history and name-wise they are, but at the minute, AC Milan are not a good team. Like, I hope, you know, Jedi gets the move. I hope he goes to AC Milan and has a brilliant career. But, I reckon he'd write still in the summer, because he came back and was very upbeat about the move. I think I'd be, you know, with my curtains drawn for weeks on end if I had a career move like that. I'd stalled and failed, but I reckon he'll go back in the summer. But yeah, someone in that mould, someone young who can, you know, who can step in and replace Baines is spot in the squad. But understudy Luka Dean, I think it'd be ideal, but it's easier said than done. We've had that before and it's not worked out. Robertson's one. Garbutt's the most obvious one. Luke Garbutt at one point looked like, yeah, well, there's our Baines replacement. Mm-hmm. I thought he'd be Luka Dean, and where is he now? Nowhere.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with you guys in a way. I'm going to flat out just agree with Max, but because of Terry's reason, because Max had similar reasons to what Terry said. Terry did that thing where he's like, we're not going to give him a contract, but I think we will, and here's the very good reason why. You know what I mean? So I think extend it by a year because we got bigger fish to fry right now. And it's just, just where we're at, you know?
And mention an AC Milan then. I'm sure Theo Hernandez is their top goal scorer at left back. Wouldn't mind us sniffing around there to see if we could get a deal to come off, but I don't know. It's a strange market to feel at left back. I think you need to be 100% sure. Like I would have said a few years about you, we should have went in for Alphonso Davies at Vancouver, but look at what he's up to now, eh?
Yeah,
what a player! What a player!
My gosh, and that's the funny thing is I had seen him play, but I had not seen him play on that kind of stage before, and I'm totally excited for him. A player who's come from MLS, playing for Bayern Munich now, and looks just so strong, man. Looks just so strong. My family watched the Chelsea Champions League match from, I guess it was last week. We had recorded it, and I rewound that assist he had. I think it was the second or third goal. I'm trying to remember which one it was, but it was nice. It's just really nice. The guy's got speed. He's intelligent. So it's trying to figure it. I think that's why you do all the research you do, man. So that's why we just got to keep thinking. That's why bronze is here, man.
Yeah, and I've got to say, and I didn't mention it in the match, like the extra time, purely because, you know, I knew we'd go on to talk about Leighton Baines, but it's 2020. Seamus Coleman and Leighton Baines shouldn't be starting games together. It's like seeing Leon Osman and Tony Ibbett in the same lineup for like the last 10 years. Like, come on, succession planning, it needs to happen. Mm-hmm. You can't just gloss over it.
And it is kind of one of those things where we are, I feel like we are moving in the right direction in terms of making decisions for the in that manner. You know what I mean, Max? Like actually being able to, but it's just not an immediate thing. And I think if you take a look at where the squad is at now, where the club is at now compared to 3 years ago, it's just a different animal entirely, which is cool. I mean, that's enough for optimism, you know, at least. But yeah, I do think our next left back, whenever Leighton Baines does decide to leave, is not on our roster yet.
True.
You know? So, all right, guys. So, that's two yeses and a no with an asterisk for the Leighton Baines new contract ? segment. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's time for If You Know Your History, the Everton-based quiz segment that pits Terry against Max in a Toffee's Cage match of wit and might. So, gentlemen, it's a starting 11 quiz. I am going to list a match from the past, and you guys need to list not just the starters, but also the subs that played for Everton in said match. The first one to give an incorrect response, it's sort of done like, first one to give an incorrect response is the loser in the round, okay? So, gentlemen, I've got a nice, shiny, plastic 50-cent piece here. All right, very nice with, looks like Elvis Presley on the cover. So, gentlemen, let's see here. Terry, I feel like you never get to call it and you complain about it just perpetually. So, Terry, if you could call it, heads or tails?
Heads.
It is heads. I didn't catch it because I'm bad at catching coins, at least plastic ones. It is heads. Terry, which one do you want, first or second?
Best, please.
No kidding. Okay. So, insert intense quiz music. Oh my gosh, it's so intense. Ah, it's like a Hitchcock film. So, guys, the match in question. The 13th of December, 2016, Everton 2, Arsenal 1. Terry, you have chosen to go first, so your answer, please.
Seamus Coleman.
Seamus Coleman is a correct answer. Well, good start. Max, what do you got?
Ashley Williams.
Ashley Williams, yes. Terry.
Phil Jagielka.
Correct. He started. Max.
Leighton Baines.
Leighton Baines did start. Well done, guys. You're on a nice little roll. Terry, what do you got?
James McCarthy.
James McCarthy did start. That's correct. Max.
2016. Lukaku.
Lukaku, yes. Terry, we're back to you, sir.
Stephen Naismith.
No. Max, you got a chance to steal the win here.
Ross Barkley.
Ross Barkley is correct. He did start. So Max gets the win. Gentlemen, do you want to keep guessing or do you want me to just blurb the rest out?
Keep guessing. I'm gutted. I was going to say Barkley and change my mind.
Oh,
if Lukaku plays, it's more or less likely that Barkley played, you know. 2016.
Koeman? Yes.
Yeah. Go on, Terry, if you're taking the next stop.
Other names, guys?
Kevin Morales.
He did not start, but he came in as a sub.
Idrissa Gueye.
Idrissa Gueye did start.
Yannick Bolasie.
No.
Was he injured before that, I think? It was that month, I think, that he got injured. It was December against Man United. I just didn't know whether it was first before that or...
Yeah, he's not on anywhere on here, so I think you're right. Max, a guess?
Gerard Deulofeu.
He was on the bench but did not play.
Oh, okay. Calvert-Lewin, he was playing for us then, weren't he?
He came in as a sub.
Okay.
This is a funky lineup, guys.
Ana Valencia.
Yes. He started. He did.
Can't believe him getting.
And I don't believe I don't believe he was chased afterward by anyone on a golf cart either. So.
I'm really upset that I got that after I've already lost.
I know. Of course, one of the harder ones, yeah. Max, you got a guess on the last two starters, and there's one more bench player that played.
Ramiro Funes Mori, or would he have been sold by then?
Funes Mori came in as a sub.
Okay.
Again, weird, right?
Yeah. I was there. I'm just trying to recall it, really.
Mm-hmm.
Aruna Kone?
No. He was not on the bench, nor did he start.
Is Howard gone by then? I mean, not mentioned.
Howard, I believe, is gone because he's not starting or a sub.
Stecklenburg
started.
Robles on the bench then, I assume?
Yes, he was on the bench. Did not play, but he was on the bench. So one more starter.
Pina?
No.
He might get his well gone on it.
I think so.
Who was right midfield?
Ah.
I can picture the team now that we've said it all, but I don't know who the right midfielder was.
So it's not Kevin Morales or Stephen...
Not Naismith, it's not Morales, it's not Delafeu.
Aaron Lennon?
Boom.
Ah, there we go, yeah.
I was going to give you guys a clue by doing this.
For those who can't see, he was doing Aaron Lennon's famous photo shoot face from when he first signed on loan, and he looked really happy
that
about
snarl.
It. Yeah. What was even better about that is when he signed permanently, he had really exaggerated smiles, like...
Yeah.
Over the top, like, to sort of correct it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, by the way, just a little bit more information on the game. The rest of the people on the bench, besides Robles, De La Feu, Morales, Funes Mori, and Calvert-Lewin, Tom Cleverley was on the bench, and Mason Holgate was on the bench. And goal scorers in the match, Alexis Sanchez scored for Arsenal. Seamus Coleman scored in the 44th minute for us. Ash Williams in the 86th minute. And Jagielka got a red card in the third minute of added time.
Did he? What,
yeah.
Do we know what for? Second yellow or straight red?
I did not see that. I just wrote down this because I thought it was interesting. I was hoping one of you guys would remember.
I assume that's why Funes Mori is coming then. Possibly.
Mm. So, guys, the quiz is over. Terry, congratulations for a solid performance. However, we got to give it up to Max. Max, got a nice little win on this one. Max, your reward, should you choose to accept it, is to pick the tune We Wrangle Out the Show to which we wrangle out the show. Let me get my language right. So, Max, what's your tune?
Given the whole VAR circus as of late, I'm going to go for Misery by the Beatles.
Misery by the Beatles. And Max, what album is that on?
Please Please Me, I think.
I was trying to remember, and honestly, it's been I get a lot of the Beatles albums confused, although I know like individual songs, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I think that's when they're all in a, or with the same haircut in a tuxedo.
Probably.
By the way, huge fan of the way you said that, by the way, Max. Please, please.
I was just dying to say when we said what album's that on, the Alan Partridge line of probably the best of the Beatles.
Yes, yes. Best of the Beatles. Nice. All right, well, Max has stated very clearly why he has picked this particular tune. I don't think we need to dissect that anymore. It's pretty clear, and I think it's pretty just and apt. So, everybody, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the show. Thanks so much for listening to the Toffee Blues Podcast. If you would, subscribe to the Toffee Blues Podcast. And you know what? If you're sitting there thinking, you know what? I am very curious as to what the beard game looks like for these three guys right now. Check out our YouTube channel. You can actually see faces to match voices. Just give you a clue, two of us have beards, one of us doesn't, but the other, the one who doesn't, has ample hair to make up for it. Use your imagination there. It's me, I have long hair right now. Alright, so anyway. So check that out if you will. Subscribe to the Toffee Blues YouTube channel. We'd really appreciate it. If you want more Max, check out the Carlisle podcast. Max is doing a lot of interview work with folks in the football business, the business of football. So it's his brainchild. So check that out. He's been working really hard on getting that started. Some really interesting takes that you can find there. Also, if you want more Terry, check out the Liverpool Echo Fan Jury. In which he just empties his brain out and shakes it all over the page about Everton, and if you ever need the warm embrace of a gentleman, Terry's your guy, or so I hear. So anyway, that's it, guys. Thanks so much. I really appreciate your time, Max. Good to see you, man. It's been a while. I know you're super busy, but I appreciate you taking the time.
No worries, man. Pleasure.
Terry, my guy, all the time. See you every week now. Good to see you, man. Appreciate it. And we'll have to. I'm gonna have to watch Parasite so we can talk about it soon.
Yeah, definitely. Always a pleasure, guys. Take it easy.
All right, and this is Jerry for Max and for Terry and the Toffee Blues. Much love to everybody out there who's got the VAR, you know, depression. I get it. We get you. We're in this together. Let's just deal with it. It'll be all right. Hopefully? Question mark. Please me. All right, guys. Much love, and we're out. Bye.